Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akio, and if you're interested in making a true difference in your organization and solving real problems, this episode is for you. Joining me today is Neelgwyn van Raat. At her core, she's a sensitive daredevil who lives the principles of change in order to make a true difference. And it really shines through in this conversation. It's a real good one. I'll put all her socials in the description below. Check her out. And with that being said, enjoy the episode. Do you take like particular care of those kind of first impressions that you have with like a new team or new connections in that way?
Yeah, a lot. Mm. A lot, to be honest. Yeah, because you can only get a first impression once.
Yeah.
And I'm quite sensitive to what is happening. So I'm quite used to really looking into what is this all about?
Yeah.
So trying to find the patterns, trying to find the culture, trying to see how the behavior is and where that does help and where it doesn't. And that's so much information.
Yeah.
And it really helps to get things going the way I need them to go.
I can imagine. Yeah. I wasn't consciously thinking about like a first impression.
Yeah.
But we had some new colleagues joining our team, for example.
Yeah.
And one of the existing team members, they had like a pair programming session. And I think it was one of their first interactions.
Yeah.
And that person got so overwhelmed of the domain knowledge and the technical expertise that the colleague that was already on the team suggested, well, next time we'll switch it around on Monday. And then over the weekend, the new colleague actually was dreading that experience. They were so overwhelmed that they weren't looking forward to switching it around and then showing their kind of knowledge in that sense. And I was kind of sad by that because that's a big impact someone has on like a first impression.
You're raising the bar.
Exactly. Yeah. And that person then dealt with like feelings of imposter, feelings of not being good enough. Because I asked, like, what was your first impression on anything?
Yeah.
On the project, on the domain, on the people. It's an interesting domain. It's an IoT domain. And then that was what he responded with.
Yeah.
And I was like, that feedback needs to come to the colleague, right? Because they need to be aware that they can have such an impact.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good thing to be of a certain level of technical expertise and to know the domain. Like, it's a good thing. But the way it comes across can have negative side effects as well.
It does. So did the colleague stay?
Yeah, they still stayed.
Oh, that's good.
And they had a conversation and it's now a bit better. Like, it doesn't come from a bad place in any case.
Yeah.
But I feel like being aware of kind of the impact that you can have, especially on a first impression.
Yeah.
I felt that my colleague that was already on the team needed to be aware of that.
Yeah, I can
And I
imagine.
Think with that, they'll probably adapt their behavior accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I feel if you start with someone or with something, it's very important to just find, like, truly try to see what happens.
Yeah.
So in order to be successful in anything, you need to truly understand why things are they are like how they are today.
Yeah.
Because they grew for some reason in what it is today. And if it needs to move to anything else, you really truly need to understand what happened before that created this outcome of today.
Yeah.
So you kind of need to see both the culture, the patterns, the system that's behind it, the way it's organized, the contribution of people, how people are used to doing it together. And in all of that, you need to kind of understand, is it helpful today and moving forward, or doesn't it add any value anymore and do we need to change it?
Yeah. But for me, organizational change, like just the things you mentioned, it's so much, like it entails a lot. And
it
seeing
does.
Kind of patterns through history and how that can kind of explain the future or the path that we're moving forward to.
Yeah.
For me, that's a humongous task. Like, I don't even know how you would start with that. Do you have, like, is the start always kind of the same in orientation? Or is it different even every time?
Yeah. To me, it feels the same.
Mm.
But the input you get is very different, of course. But I am quite consistent in that, to put it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure how you do it. But yeah, I'm just walking around and sniffing up what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it hangs around, right? You can feel it if you come into one of those rooms or in a building and you see those people interact and you kind of get this first feel of hunch for, like, what's really happening out here?
Yeah.
And I think it's just a matter of trying to stay without any judgment, trying to be really curious and open, to understand it in the context of what is happening there and then.
Yeah.
And then there's, in my head, this little, it sounds as if it's just pure analysis, but it's not. I kind of look at what's the processes around here? What's the organization like? How does it help or not?
Yeah.
I'm looking at, like, what's the culture? Like, how do they interact? Is it constructive? Is it, are they striving to be the best, or are they truly collaborating? Is there any openness or closeness amongst them that doesn't help them forward.
Yeah.
Is there any leadership issues that need to be resolved? Is leadership able to truly facilitate what that team or those teams need? Hmm. And then there's also the system, like the cultural system. Like if you would change every person in a team, or if you would change a manager of a team like 10 times in 5 years, and it still doesn't work, then it's not depending on the persons, then something else is happening.
Interesting.
And if you kind of sniff into what's happening over there, then it gets truly fascinating. And all those little pieces of input, they kind of make this puzzle.
Yeah.
And then you need to kind of understand, like, what's the most important root cause to the things that I'm seeing, to the patterns that I'm seeing?
Yeah.
What's the most important thing that needs to change around? And then you need to pick the right thing to do first.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Did you ever experience that?
I do a lot of things naturally. And I feel like, I mean, the podcast is kind of an artifact of that. Like, I'm naturally curious. So if there's an organization, I want to understand why things are the way they are, why people behave the way they behave. And it's more of an innate curiosity. And it's not something that's strategic that I can take with me and then apply somewhere. I'm trying to learn that because I think it can help my skill set be more aware of the theory and then kind of lay out, for example, all those puzzle pieces and then kind of decide based on history and experience what I think we should pick up next or what the biggest puzzle should be we should work on, the piece. But a lot of it is still kind of gut feeling, experience-based learning in that way.
I think it'll always be like that.
Yeah.
Because you truly need to trust your intuition too. I mean, it's not something that comes with rationale only.
Yeah.
You can't really learn the trick to do that.
I can imagine. Once you've decided like what to work on, like are you 100% in or is there still doubt or do you test those assumptions first or how do you like take that first step in that way?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I think it kind of depends on the assignment. Mm. So the assignment gives you the context.
Yeah.
The assignment gives you the context in where they expect you to move and what they expect you to do. So that gives you kind of the boundaries. But I am not that limited by boundaries. So I it's just a piece of information.
Yeah.
An assignment or context is just information. Mm. So I understand why they ask it and what they then expect. And I think then I do my sniffing around. And once I get my analysis kind of complete in my head and I find the most important root causes in whatever angle they are, then I think it's very important to just feed that back as open, as transparent as possible. Because I think they really have the right to understand what is truly happening.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would give them the opportunity to choose, because they don't always do, but it would give them the opportunity to choose to truly fix it.
Exactly.
And if that's not what's going to happen, that's perfectly fine. But if they do, then they also know the honesty and the straightforwardness the how I put it with them. Mm. I truly believe that if your intentions are pure, you can say almost anything.
Interesting.
So if you do it without a judgment, if you do it looking forward, if you do it from a true meaning of making things better, if that is your true intention, you can say everything. Mm. So that conversation back to those people that ask me to come and look around and do something for them, if you start having that true conversation with them, it quite often opens their eyes because it's different angles to what they don't often get feedback. They don't often get the true information anymore.
Why do you think that is? Because is it because they operate at such a level that people don't dare to give them that feedback? Like my manager has asked me before, can you be 100% honest with me? Because it feels like you are.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think I am.
It's a beautiful question.
I'm not sure, right? Because there's an innate sense of hierarchy. I might not even know it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I can. Because you are my manager at the end of the year. I have a conversation with you. It's about salary. It's about performance. It's about my role in this organization.
Yeah.
So then I don't know.
And it's also about your image in a company.
Yeah.
And how others perceive you, because he will be the one talking about you to others, which gives you growth opportunities or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I at this moment, I work as a freelancer, so that gives me kind of instant independence and autonomy.
Yeah.
But I've been working for a large company over 20 years, and I think I have kind of a unique thing in me that makes me independent of hierarchy.
Mm.
So for me, I truly believe that if things need to be said or done, you need to say them or do them. From what I just said, from the best intention.
Yeah.
And if people around you or above you or whoever can't deal with that, that's not really my problem. I can't help it if you can't deal with it. So
yeah,
either I didn't say it right enough, like clear enough or carefully enough or honestly enough, so I can try to rephrase and try again. But if somebody can't deal with that, I used to go up the chain, because then the problem is not going to be solved on that level. I need to go up without cheating or without, I do bypass them, but I let them know beforehand.
Yeah.
But you need to go up in order to truly solve it. And I've always done that.
Mm.
I've never felt anything holding me back from doing that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did someone teach you that? Because I didn't start out as a software engineer. I started out in operations.
Yeah.
And I had a mentor, and he kind of taught me how to do that. Like, that wasn't innate in me. And because I saw him do that and get stuff done, really solve problems, not just put a Band-Aid on it, but actually solve an underlying issue.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's possible. And he's like, escalating is not a bad thing.
No.
It's not a bad thing at all. People think it's negative. People think, oh, you're overstepping someone, you're telling on someone. But that's not what you're doing.
It's not.
No.
It depends on your intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't repeat that often enough. But that's what allows it or not. Mm. So if your goal is to just pulse everybody and get them whatever fired or hurt some way, that's a wrong intention. But if you do it from a I want to truly make it better perspective, and I've had the right conversations, and I've tried but I couldn't get through because whatever practical thing, then you need to go up.
Yeah.
Did
someone teach you that?
Yeah.
Or is it kind of a self-learned skill?
I think I've always had that.
Mm.
I think I remember me as a child. There's this one brilliant example. I think I was like 14 or so. I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I had to be home in time I kind of recall the reason, but I just felt I need to be home in time. It was important to me.
Yeah.
And then this teacher, the bell rang, hour was done, I needed to go. And he just kept on talking. And I was like, I need to go.
Yeah.
Time's up. Too bad. Class is over. I'm leaving. And he was just standing in front of the door like, you're not going.
Okay.
I was like, well, that's too bad for you. But it's after school time now, so I'm free to go. So I wish you a really good day. Bye-bye, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I think I've always had that, like, principle thing of how it should be.
Mm. You're not scared of those conversations either? Because me, and especially early on, like, the more green you are, the less experience you have. Sometimes I was not looking forward to, like, conversations with people in higher leadership. And especially if something messed up or I needed to explain things, like, I would get nervous. And now the more I've done that, the more I realize that, like, nervousness is good. And I didn't have to be that nervous. Like, everyone is in this together and we're all moving forward.
Yeah.
But yet still I was nervous and I wasn't looking forward to those conversations.
I've always liked them.
That's good.
I always had the feeling that I was like, oh, I got a piece of information the person is truly missing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to help him so much by making him understand where the key is to unlock this hidden gem that you can just improve.
That's amazing.
And of course, sometimes those mostly guys are quite intimidating, right?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they have a reputation of shouting around and bullying and blah, blah, blah. They do have that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm kind of in my head like, well, I'm just going to say it. If he doesn't hear it, that's okay.
Yeah.
And I'll just move on. I don't mind if he can't hear it. That's a perfect fine outcome.
Yeah.
And I kind of, what also helped me is I got to play around with Rose of Leary.
Mm.
So I kind of understood how this... it is a model that explains how to be above and beneath.
Okay.
So how to communicate against and together, and it's fascinating how you can influence a conversation using that model to bend it into the direction you need it to go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Rose of Leary, is that?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check it out after.
Yeah, actually. Check it out. It's
might
quite
put
nice.
Some stuff in the description.
Yeah, it's good.
Because I love, like, I've done a communication training. It was called Insight and Influence.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And in there, yeah. You do a lot of role playing and you take a certain conversation style, right?
Yeah.
If I really want to do a discussion, I can only do certain phrases or only keep holding this discussion.
Yeah.
And then at some point I see where I hit the wall, where discussing doesn't really make sense anymore.
Yeah.
And then I have to retrieve information. I have to ask questions and really do active listening and try and understand.
There's pull and push styles, right? It's practicing. It's really brilliant.
I really like that. Yeah. Because
do you still apply it like consciously and in different situations?
I do, because I then realize, okay, this is not working.
Yeah.
Because I've done that, because it was like a 5-day training course and it was like really intense. Yeah. You were there from 9 a.m, you would exit at like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
It was also abroad, which was a whole experience in and of its own. But throughout that, I was like, okay, this is not working anymore. I have to switch. Like I genuinely, consciously can switch. And I have my preferred style. Like it's kind of, you can see it in the podcast. Like I like active listening. I like trying to understand. I'm innate curious.
Yeah.
So that might be my default style. But if I do need to get stuff done, I can't only retrieve information. At some point, I have to make an argument. I have to make a point, or I have to inspire in a different way as well.
Yeah.
And figuring out what works best and when to apply what, or even building that relationship so you can do that.
Yeah.
I think that's very valuable.
It is. And I think you say building a relationship, that can take time, but it can also be done in an instant.
Mm.
Like, and that has to do with intention again.
Yeah.
Because if you're, like, I remember one moment when I stepped into a room of a manager, like 5 or 6 layers above me. I needed to tell him something really ugly.
Okay.
It was very ugly.
Yeah.
And it had to do with him too. And I remember coming into that office and he would not have time for me. He would just be on his email like, and he would just ignore me coming in.
Really?
And I was like, okay, is this how we're going to do this conversation? No way.
Yeah, this is a good start.
So I was going to sit on his desk, like next to him. And I was literally above him because he was still sitting on his chair. And I looked at him and said, busy today.
Yeah.
I kind of forced him to do, I just went into his space. He had to do something with me.
Yeah.
And then he looked up and then we both had this grin on our face and I kind of won the first battle.
That's hilarious.
It was cool.
Yeah.
And then it was done. Mm. I could say anything and he would just listen. And he later, also a few times later, he would come back to me and said, how did I do that? Did it help?
Yeah.
How was it perceived? And then we got this coaching relation and that kind of worked out. So it can also be done in an instant without all this style switching or about without adjusting yourself that much.
Yeah.
It's also a matter of, and that's playing with Rose of Leary, it's also about being on the same level and not accepting the dominance or arrogance or of another and just getting at the same height.
Yeah.
Or depth, loath, how do you say that, as the other?
The same level.
Just getting getting at the same level.
Interesting. Yeah. I like that you said that you also got feedback from him, like how it was perceived and how it came across. It's something I didn't do consciously, but I wanted to know. Again, probably from a sense of curiosity, I wanted to know how it came across.
Yeah.
Because I would grab a colleague randomly. I would say, this conversation was really difficult. I wasn't looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I want to know how it came across.
Yeah.
And with that feedback, with their feedback, I would go to others and see if kind of that puzzle made sense from the different pieces of feedback. And that would then be, okay, do I need to work on this? Do I like this? How I come across? Do I need to change anything? Yeah. What can I do better in the future?
Yeah.
And I did it very much early on. I think also because of more insecurities, I guess.
Yeah, but it helps you to kind of see yourself in that interaction.
Exactly.
It's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's valuable to do that.
Yeah.
So I like that you did that as well.
Yeah.
Has it ever backfired where you tried to convey certain pieces of information, might not have been what they wanted to hear, so they acted like they didn't want to hear that?
I think I kind of blocked that out.
That's good.
It's not that important to me if they want to hear it.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid, but I really mean it. It's not that important. So it's what I can bring.
Yeah.
And they can either take it or not. And both is fine. I think it has to do with, I don't often have a judgment.
Yeah.
And staying without a judgment makes it possible to not disturb the relation while having interesting content going up and down between persons. And I think I had assignments or jobs or that didn't work out that well. Of course I did. Everybody does. Mm-hmm. And then you learn. But I don't think it's related to what I had to say or to how I said it. Mm. I think it's then more related to underlying values that don't match, or company culture that where I don't fit.
Yeah.
If the culture is, an example, very political or very aimed at short-term success, and I come there with the intention to do structurally things that are helpful in the longer term,
yeah,
they are not going to be able to hear that.
It's going to clash. Yeah.
I understand. And it's fine. And I don't belong there at that moment in time.
Yeah.
And that's also fine.
I like that a lot, because accepting that that is a thing that you cannot control allows you to move forward so much easier than if you were like, okay, was it something I said? Was it how I came across? Like, is it something I can control?
Yeah.
And then probably because it's a clash, you're not like able to get that feedback. So accepting what has happened and accepting it might have been out of your control allows you to move forward faster, I feel like.
Yeah, and making sure it doesn't become a clash.
Yeah.
It's just the one fact, how one experiences it and how I stand in this assignment thing. And then you have this conversation like, okay, oh, well, I don't think we really match then. It's just also just an observation and just, okay, then that's it. That's perfectly fine. And just thanks a lot for time. I learned a lot and looking forward to seeing you again.
Yeah.
At this moment, it's not the right place to be, but perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems how you come across is very, first of all, genuine. And I can see that you're laying out things objectively, that you have kind of that, you're not really there to judge, right? You put things in perspective, you give it straight as is and objectively. And I think it's a valuable skill, but I don't know if it can be taught, if it can be learned, or if people just have it innately in them.
I think it's another book thingy, but I once read a book. It's called The Box. It's written by the Arbinger Institute.
Yeah.
And it describes brilliantly and easily how to interact without having a judgment. Mm. So it's something that you can get a lot of insight in and you can understand your own position in that a lot. But I think it also comes from both nature and nurture. So I think that during life, everybody lives their life and life throws stuff at you. And some stuff is nice and some stuff is not that nice.
Yeah.
And at moments that happens, you have this chance to decide how you're going to deal with that. So of course you're going to feel hurt or angry or sad or a victim for a while.
Yeah.
And accepting those feelings and then like getting over them, like I have felt all of them. I felt my worst anger. I felt my worst fears. Getting over them and then thinking, okay, so if this was it, I'm feeling a bit better now. And then continue and then I think it's a matter of choice how you are able to deal with that. If you can't blame not being happy on others or situations that had happened in the past. It's kind of stupid to have, I don't know, 30 adult years in which you're not happy because you had 5 years as a childhood which were not that nice.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, right?
No.
So live through that and then decide that you are the only one responsible for your own happiness on a day-to-day basis. And influence that. It's within your circle of influence. You can control what you think and how you feel about it and what you want to do about it.
Yeah.
That is a choice. And in the beginning, after life, through ugly things, it's a bit difficult. But then once you've gone through that, then it's easier to choose again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know where I got this quote, but I read somewhere that you can't really influence what happens. Well, you have some form of influence, but things happen. And things can happen for a reason. They can also happen for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
But you have the option to choose how to react towards that, right? You are in control of your emotions as well.
Yeah.
And how you react and how you move forward or not, that is your choice, basically.
Yeah. And it's about, so you can be a victim. Hmm. If something bad happened, you are a victim.
Yeah.
And it's your choice if you're going to be that, how long you're going to be that, and what you're going to learn from that once you decide to step out.
Yeah.
And continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I feel like, and this might be weird, but people that have gone through real hardships, sometimes I have a conversation with them and I can feel that they've had that experience and they've moved forward from that. Like I feel like it gives a person a certain sense of perspective And it comes across also in a conversation or how they behave. All of a sudden, there's something different or there's something more to them that wasn't there before.
Yeah, it's funny how you say it, because it feels to me, if I meet people that have that, it feels to me they have this steady base in themselves. So they're like this Russian Matryoshka dolls that rock a bit if you push on them, but they will always stay in the middle. They do wiggle, but they don't fall.
Exactly.
And they will always be in their basis. And that basis is just themselves. They are good with them.
Yeah.
And if you're good with you, you will be stable
in
the basics. Whatever life throws at you, you will be stable because you know you can go through that because you've done it before.
I like that analogy a lot.
Yeah.
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
People that are grounded.
Yeah.
That know who they are comfortable with that. And they've kind of gotten the experience that allows them to be that comfortable with it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm sure you met them too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm in that place, but people have described me like that as well.
Hmm.
And I think everyone goes through hardships. It just varies how much and in what frequency, I feel like. But you are right. You accept that it has happened. You choose to move forward.
Yeah.
There are things that have happened. Like my mom got cancer twice when I was in university. Once, and I could deal with it, and I still get emotional talking about this. And then it happened again the year after.
Yeah.
And the second time was worse because they told her, like, there's a small chance you'll make it through this.
Oh.
Which was like, she's someone that's very positive, that can go through anything.
Yeah.
But if you tell her that, like from a medical expertise,
that
can take a hit in motivation.
It will.
Really badly.
Yeah.
And that sips through me, my siblings, through everyone. And still she made it through. And I think throughout that experience, like some people are like, oh, you might have missed out on like university experiences and stuff like that. And I was like, I might have, but I gained something else. And it's hard to explain because it's a certain sense of perspective.
It is.
And a certain sense of like increased value that I have towards a family, towards a family feeling, towards my mom who's still there.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that it has happened. Not in the moment, definitely not, but I did gain something from it. Yeah. I didn't just lose.
Yeah. I recognize those things, but that's a big story.
Yeah.
That's a big experience.
Yeah.
It's nice if you can go through that together, right? If you can be there with your siblings and your mother and your other family and do that together. It's so, so important to do that together.
Yeah, it was. And it was really hard because I was like, okay, I thought my life was going to go in a different direction, basically. And I told my mom, I'll drop out of university, I'll start working, like, we need to figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
And she was like, you make sure that you live your life like the way you want it, the way you planned it.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to change, basically. You live your life and I'm not going to allow you to drop out because that was always the plan.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I was like, okay, this is going to be all right. Eventually. Might not be now. Definitely not now.
Yeah.
But eventually it will be all right. And that's how it turned out.
Yeah.
If it might have turned out differently, it would have still been all right. It would have just been different.
Yeah.
And I feel like with that in mind, I don't know, things and hardships now don't seem as hard anymore.
No.
Basically.
It's just put things in perspective.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful how she gave you like the purpose, how she gave you the drive to continue.
Yeah.
How to live.
Absolutely.
Next to what everything that happened. But that's really nice of her that she could do that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had a lot innate in me, but I have a lot with regards to nurture and a lot from her. Yeah. And I can pinpoint, this is what I got from you. I give her that feedback. Yeah. The way I act now that she praises, I'm like, yeah, that's because of what you did to me.
You told me that.
Exactly. Not did to me, but how you raised me, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
the
nice.
Experience.
And do you then also recognize that with your siblings? Do they do they share that?
Yeah. They have certain, like, I can see them and I can perceive and sometimes I reflect objectively. I'm like, where does that come from? And I'm like, I also do that. Or maybe they have that from me. But then I have that from either my mom or my dad, right?
Yeah.
And you can see that in the chain, that people kind of, they do what they've seen before.
Yeah.
And I think in organizations it's the same, in your family it's the same.
Yeah.
Even in your friend circle, you act like the people around you.
Yeah.
And if they're different than you, they do things differently as well. And it gives you perspective. You can be like, oh, this is also an option. I didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
But I'll take this because I think it's better.
Yeah.
I have no problem being a chameleon and being like, I like having many tools to figure things out.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice how you say that people act like how their parents did, how their grandparents did, and how it's in this family history, right?
Yeah.
It's quite extreme, to be honest. If you think about, if you have any knowledge about systems, because this is like a family system, and how patterns are given through generation to generation to generation, you see patterns in behavior going through all those lines, like multiple generations back.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. I'm making the switch to a company now because it's very interesting to realize and understand that those same patterns in how you behave are also existing in companies.
Yeah.
So in an organization, it's also very common to see patterns that are just there, that are not depending on people, but are just in the building. Mm-hmm. They are just in the walls.
In the walls,
I mean, if you step in, they're there. And quite often, if you look at change in organizations, if it doesn't work and everything that makes sense has been tried, quite often it's in those, I call it systems.
Yeah.
And then you have to look in a different way. You have to feel it in a different way.
Yeah.
And then translate and subtitle what's truly happening to people that are not used to trusting that intuition or really seeing what that system, how that influences the culture of today.
Exactly.
It's fascinating if you start looking in that angle.
I can imagine. I mean, you gave the example of a team completely switching, even management, and then the same patterns kind of re-emerging. To me, that is very hard to grasp. Like what is happening there and what is kind of the cause of that?
Yeah.
Because that is a system. There's a root cause somewhere. It's not the people. The people might be the easy solution.
Yeah.
But it's not.
That is what's right. What's right, of course. That's the first thing they're trying to say. Like, hey, don't... It's a fascinating example. So I once was manager of a team. And in that team, the average age, I don't know exactly. Let's say it was about 35.
Yeah.
And what happened is, I was in a conversation in a refinement with that team as their manager because I wanted to see how they interacted. Just gave me loads of input about those persons, about how they communicated, important for, understanding how they are and how they perform every day.
Yeah.
I join refinements quite often. So I was in their refinement and those people, 35-ish, all of them, they started talking. It was in a time that I was with ING. They started talking about the merge of ING and Postbank.
Okay.
That happened when they were born.
Yeah.
But then still, they had arguments that came from Postbank.
Really?
I was like, what?
Yeah.
You're saying what exactly? Why? And then I was like, this is not... There was a pattern going on in a team. Everything was going on in the team. And I was like, this is not on those people.
No.
This is in the system. We need to do something differently. That was cool.
Yeah, I can imagine. That is so strange. Also, for people that are very much like looking towards short-term solutions or are more short-sighted than others, I feel like communicating that it is not in the people, that we need to look into other things, that like a whole system needs to change.
Yeah.
I think the fact that a system needs to change is one thing. And then the time period that it actually does change is going to vary. But I think it's a long kind of term play.
It depends on the root cause.
Mm.
How can I put that? So if it is pure systematic, if the only root cause is in the system, there's this beautiful TV program they made of it. It's called Cross the Line.
Yeah.
So they have this gym with kids, and the kids are, there's some bullying going on in this group, and those kids are all with their back against the wall of the gym, and then they say, take two steps forward if your parents are still together. Step, and others don't move. Take two steps forward if, all kinds of situations.
Yeah.
And then they say, stop, look around. People look around and they see, hey, those people that act a bit weird every now and then, they're still with their back against the wall or just two steps away. And I'm here almost on the other side of the gym. What's happening? And what they do is they solve the system. They do a system intervention.
Mm.
And they do it on the binding, so they do it on the inclusion. So what they do is they enlarge, they extrapolate, how if you said that even in English, but they make larger the differences between the people in that group.
Yeah.
And what they do is they say, it gets visible by people moving, taking distance from that wall.
Yeah, there's a physical divide, literally.
So what happens is, and then it stops. And what happens then is they start cuddling and they start like, oh my gosh, I never realized life was like that for you. Now I understand why you dress maybe different, or why you behave a bit different, or why you have your mind somewhere else, why you sometimes your text is a bit rude or whatever, or you can't adapt to how we think it should be done in our system of how it should be.
Yeah.
And then this inclusion comes because the differences have been made clear, explicit, and then the inclusion of the differences is there, and the bullying is gone.
Yeah,
it's just gone, and that's really just cool. An intervention that can take an hour,
yeah,
and then it's gone. So sometimes it's very easy, and sometimes, most of the times, changes are very complex. So there's many root causes, and if you solve one or a few, you don't even see any difference. But you know that you need to solve them because there are so many of them. You need to get through maybe 60, 70% of those root causes before you see any difference.
Yeah. I like that example a lot.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I feel like even in a team, I've said this before, but it always feels like a group of individuals kind of comes together.
Yeah.
And through tried and true, and a lot of time, they'll figure out those differences and inclusion will happen, right? Unless they really clash, but then still there's some form of intervention and they still grow towards each other. But there's not really anything that I've seen that people take the time initially when a team forms to actually create those relationships, to get an understanding of where people come from, why they are different or why they are the way they are, for then the collaboration to be better because of it. Yeah. I feel like it happens naturally, but no one puts in the time and effort to actually do that and accelerate that process, even though it might be valuable.
It is so valuable.
Yeah.
And also, this is one of the principles that a system needs to comply to. There's a few of them. So it requires really looking very carefully to what truly happens.
Yeah.
And then thinking of the proper interventions to do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What interventions have you done in a team like to actually put in practice? Do you have any examples towards that?
Yeah. So, I do. The reason I'm thinking is because not everything can be shared that easily. So
yeah, no problem.
I'm just kind of thinking, which can I take? I think I'll just take one that I could have done.
Yeah.
Instead of what I really did, because it's not easy to share without giving
no problem
a lot of information.
Yeah, I get that.
So sometimes in organizations, you see that there is kind of a implicit fight going on in an example in a team or in a management team or in an organization between business units.
Yeah.
And if that fight is not easily solved and keeps coming back in all kinds of shapes and it looks different every time, so the symptoms can be different but the root cause is the same, it's quite likely there is an issue in ordering.
Yeah.
And ordering is not necessarily hierarchical, but it's about who goes first on what.
Okay.
A system needs it to be explicit who goes first on what. So if there is people that need to work together, but also all have a hierarchical, are hierarchically on the same level, and a decision needs to be made, there's different interests. So people want to go left and others want to go right. And if they never, like almost never agree, that's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Because in the end, all of them should have the interest of the company as a whole. And that means that in like 60, 70%, they should agree because it's quite clear what the best would be for the company, right?
Yeah.
If that doesn't happen, and it still sounds logical with arguments that make sense and so, you kind of think, what is underlying? What's happening? And it can be, one of the causes can be that it's unclear on which subject, who of those guys goes first.
Yeah.
So it could be that if it goes on, I don't know, money and time lies, Mr. A goes first. And if it goes on people and a development of people and ambitions, person B goes first. So that can be different. So an example in a team, if a team refines and there's always constant discussion going on, people trying to be smarter, outsmart others. It helps if you make clear who goes first on what. So if we talk about developing in A, then we say, okay, so who's most experienced in this? And they make a line, and then that line ordens itself. And it goes, okay, so if we talk about A, we listen to you first because you're most knowledgeable about that. And then we listen to you, and then the group of you have a proper discussion. And if all of you agree, the rest of us will also agree because you're there, so you know most. But on a different subject, that ordering could be completely different. So if a team, an example, keeps on fighting, or managers keep on fighting on who gets it their way, it helps to find out in which aspects the ordering might not be explicit.
Interesting.
Or being fought about.
Yeah.
If they fight about who goes first on what, it looks different.
Yeah. And I wonder where that comes from, right? Because as you say, people should have kind of the best interest of the organization at heart. Yeah. Yet I think egos can clash, and there's probably a lot of like past experience that kind of contributes towards that, that they do feel like, oh my, something is in danger here. And that's why they fight and advocate for what they think is right, even though they might think like, oh, your argument's better. They won't let go of that.
Yeah.
Because of those reasons.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah. And I think there, yeah, I kind of look back to the beginning, but there the intention comes back, right?
Yeah.
So there's this thing called trust equation. It tells how trustworthy are you. Mm. Has to do with what you do, is what you say, is what you, your intention is.
Yeah.
And as long as that is congruent, people are more easily to trust you.
Yeah.
It's more easy for them to trust you. So then, if you can, if people start feeling your intentions are not true, like sincere, or are not the not proper or not legitimate for what the organization goal and strategies are,
yeah,
you lose trust really rapidly.
Interesting.
So staying congruent is utmost important.
Yeah. I think if you do that, that also allows you to either kind of draw between the lines or outside the lines, yeah, and move upward like you do in those conversations as well, right? Yeah. Because you and your interest, and because of that sense of how do you say that? Of being genuine, I'm going to go with that, yeah. Kind of holds true in who you are, then those boundaries, because they're not really physical boundaries, they're not boundaries anymore.
No, they'll go.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting and what I've perceived as well is that the people that help with those teams and that help with those conversations,
yeah,
also they are within teams, right? We can, yeah, talk about leadership teams in that aspect.
Yeah.
And they really know how to advocate and how to build teams. Yet leadership teams sometimes can also be a mess in and of itself.
Yeah.
One of those two. And in any case, I think in most cases, what really helps is an objective view on that. How do you operate, not just as a bunch of individuals, but really as a team, right? Yeah. With a shared interest. The shared interest of the organization, because this is a leadership team.
Yeah, but that's a fascinating statement, because leadership teams, they can be teams, but they can also be groups.
Yeah.
And depending on, so the difference between that is crucial.
Mm.
Because if you're a team, you have a shared goal and a shared interest. And then you need to have something that you're mutually dependent on each other to achieve the result.
Yeah.
So if you look at ice skating, you have the ploegenachtervolging. So you have the four people skating rounds, and then all four of them need to make the finish in a certain time.
Yeah.
So if you do that, all four of those people are dependent on each other's performance.
Absolutely.
And if one gets tired, the other takes over and goes first and takes the harder position to skate from, right? So that's a team. Hmm. They're mutually dependent on each other.
Yeah.
Quite often, management teams are no teams but groups. So they happen to be together managed by one manager,
yeah,
because they're all in the same domain, an example. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they are a team, because they could all be quite successful doing their own thing,
yeah,
and being successful in their own area of responsibility. So only if there is an overlying goal,
yeah,
that they have a dependency on each other, only then your statement is valid. Because you should treat them as a group if they're a group.
Yeah.
You should treat them as a team if they're a team. And that is a complete different story.
Interesting. I mean, for me, I've seen people act as a group, but yet there are shared goals. And then all of a sudden it slips through the cracks, right?
The goals can be shared, but the question is, are they dependent of each other to reach them?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, if the answer is no, they're not a team. It's not a bad thing if they're not a team. They still can hang out together, do escape rooms together, and have loads of fun.
Yeah.
That's not the criterion. But if you mean team and achieving a goal together, they need to be mutually dependent. If the one fails, all of them will fail.
Yeah.
And if it's not like that, they're a group.
Yeah.
And you as a manager of a team or a group, you have to do different things.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen that or have that distinction laid out to me like that. But I do think that some goals kind of slip through the crack if you're even a group of individuals, right?
Yeah.
Because if you are dependent on each other and if you can contribute together towards a shared goal, I think that makes you stronger either as a group or a team,
yeah,
or from a group to a team rather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you find a legitimate and valid goal for all of those people,
yeah,
derived from the strategy, because the purpose has to be right. It cannot just be any assignment. that you make them mutually dependent of each other. It has to be valid for the right of existence of the organization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think I've seen that. Let's say there's a group of people, and for now I'm going to call this a leadership group, that if one of the aspects goes wrong, all of a sudden the other people need to step in.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, okay, this is a clear symptom of it being a team, right?
Yeah.
Because if other people have to step in for that part of the organization or that part of the goal kind of to be upheld, then all of a sudden you are kind of contributing towards that common goal in that aspect.
Yeah, but if you step in because somebody else fails and you take over job bits of a job and bits of responsibility.
No, it's just more effort goes towards it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I get it. Yeah.
Exactly.
You're right.
That's what I've seen before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny, but I don't know. Did you often see differences in how in example, one of those management teams was steered? Do you see the difference between a team and a group?
Not really. Okay. I just talk a lot about my expectations because I sometimes give feedback to my own leadership, my own management, my own manager. I've done that in the past. I still continue to do that. And I say, I expect you to operate as a team because I think we do have a shared goal, right?
Yeah.
The shared goal is X, Y, and Z. I expect you to move towards that together, right? I don't want to hear from person A a different story than from person B. It means you're not aligned.
Yeah. It
means you're not actually a team.
Yeah.
I want the story to be honed. I want it to be clear, like across the board.
Congruent.
Exactly. And I want that transparently communicated as well. That's what I expect.
Yeah.
And then what they do with that feedback, that's not up to me.
Yeah.
But I tell them this is what I expect.
Yeah.
And I think more people do so as well.
Yeah.
And then usually they take that to heart and they try to improve. And sometimes not. And then I'm like, okay, I'll tell it again and I'll say it again at some point. I'm not there to say it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you go up because you're autonomous.
That could be that as well. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you can only go so much up as well.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
Yeah. Nogan, I've really enjoyed this conversation, I must say. This was a lot of fun.
Me too.
Was this kind of what you expected?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure what to expect because I'm not that much of a podcast listener.
Yeah.
But I really liked the conversation.
Awesome.
So
is there anything you still want to share?
Oh, not really. I think... No, it's just a conversation. It went the way it went. And
awesome.
I just liked what we did and where we got.
Cool.
So thanks
too.
A lot.
Thank you so much as well for coming on. I'm going to round it off here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Nogan van Raat. I'm going to put all her socials in the description below. Reach out to her. Let her know you came from our show. And with that being said, thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one.